Welcome to the program, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to the South Bay Show, Preparing for Disaster in America on Thursday, July 30th, 2013. My name is Jackie Balestra, and I'm sitting in as host this morning for the still vacationing Joe Terry. Thank you for tuning in. Live, love, laugh, and leave a legacy. That's what we do here in the South Bay of Los Angeles, and it's a beautiful place to do just that. The South Bay Show is brought to you by Tapas and Vino. Located in the heart of Riviera Village, Tapas and Vino offers an idyllic location to meet and eat and has quickly become a favorite destination of local foodies. This charming bistro offers an eclectic menu of small plates, salads, soups, and entrees for lunch and dinner daily. In addition, brunch is served every Saturday and Sunday with endless, yes, that's right, endless mimosas and bellinis. The popular outdoor patio boasts a vibrant scene each evening and features live music every Tuesday night. The extensive wine list offers varietals from regions around the globe, and brew enthusiasts will appreciate the comprehensive beer selection. Tapas and Vino is currently running a Not Just Tapas and Vino campaign for listeners of the South Bay Show. Mention the South Bay Show or South Bay by Jackie and receive 25% off a lunch or Saturday or Sunday brunch entree. Be sure to visit the Tapas and Vino Facebook page for weekly specials and discounts. Tapas and Vino is located at 1729 South Catalina Avenue in Redondo Beach. For more information, visit the website at www.tapasevino.com, that's TapasyVino.com, or call 310-791-8200. You can find out more about us on Facebook at facebook.com/The South Bay Show, or visit us on our website at www.thesouthbayshow.com. Preparing for disaster in America. This is a subject that can never be treated lightly, but we do our best to make it interesting, engaging, and yes, even entertaining to learn the few key skills and primary information that could save your life, the life of a loved one, or that of a neighbor in a time of crisis. Our mission is to engage hearts and minds and build knowledge and skills to help you prepare for whatever may come. This show is a true collaboration with Solid Roots in the South Bay community and a partnership with the official disaster preparation establishment. Our producer is the president of the local Manhattan Beach Community Emergency Response Team Association, Mr. George Butts. Hey, George, how are you doing this morning?
Good morning, Jackie. I am fine, thank you. Good morning, listeners. And Jackie, you are doing fabulous. Tell everybody what we're doing today.
Well, this morning we have a very special guest. Our guest is Police Chief Eve Irvine. Chief Irvine was sworn in as the Manhattan Beach Police Chief on May 25th, 2011. Prior to joining the Manhattan Beach Police Department, Eve worked for the Inglewood PD, where she began her career in 1982 as a police cadet. She became a police officer in 84 and attended the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Police Academy. Eve was promoted to detective in 1990. As a detective, Eve became a nationally recognized expert in the area of domestic violence and worked assignments in sex crimes, child abuse, assaults, and robbery. She attended the highly acclaimed Delinquency Control Institute at the University of Southern California and was promoted to the rank of sergeant, working in the patrol bureau as a field supervisor and watch commander. In 1995, she was transferred to the administrative bureau as supervisor over police training and personnel. Eve was appointed to the position of acting lieutenant in 1997 and transferred to the patrol bureau as watch commander. She was promoted to the rank of lieutenant a couple of years later and transferred to the office of the chief of police, where she served as adjutant to the chief of police. In addition, she commanded the Community Affairs Section and Internal Affairs and also served as Press Information Officer for the department. In 2003, Eve was promoted to the rank of Police Captain. She has a Bachelor of Science in Business and Management from the University of Redlands and an MBA from the University of Laverne. She is a graduate of the FBI National Academy and California's Post Command College and is recognized as an expert in the field of media relations. Eve lives in the South Bay, is married to a Torrance Police Department captain, and has three grown children. She was born and raised in the state of New York, enjoys outdoor sports, and participates in sprint triathlons. She loves animals, especially rabbits, and has four of them. Welcome to the program, Chief Irvine. We are so glad you could join us this morning.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone.
So anyway, we want to get right to it because we have a lot to discuss this morning. And since tomorrow is Wednesday, the beginning of the International Surf Festival, as well as the Charlie Stakely volleyball tournament, better known as Six Man, which starts tomorrow and finishes up Thursday, We wanted to talk about that a little bit because there's a little history to that event. Can you tell us what preparations you have in store for that tomorrow?
Sure. So the six-man event has been going on in the city of Manhattan Beach for 50 years, a little over 50 years. And it started out as a local hometown affair that had, you know, a few teams, six men on each team, and it grew over the next 50 years into a huge, huge beach party. Somewhere along the line, it seemed, though, that the people that came to our community forgot that the whole event was about volleyball, and it turned into an extremely crazy party, almost like, you know, a drunk fest party. And so what we did in 2012 was the city and the police department got together and determined how we were going to mitigate some of the effects of the fallout from that party atmosphere and focus, again, solely on the volleyball. So several different mitigating conditions existed, and we ultimately decided that it should happen during the week to see if that would help, you know, some of the party. And last year was our first year, and it did. It decreased a lot of the party atmosphere while still maintaining the volleyball entertainment.
Yes, you moved it to a weekday. From what I understand, not last year, the year before, in previous years, they had somewhere upwards of 60,000 people showing up for that. Is that correct? 50?
Correct. I was appointed in May of 2011, and the sixth man was in July of 2011, and it was the largest event they had had. It was about 60,000 people that converged onto the city, this small little town, and it was a huge problem. We ultimately arrested, I think, 39 people within a 9 or 10-hour period of time.
You know, Eve, I have to tell you, I've lived in the South Bay for over 25 years now, and my husband used to play in that tournament years ago with his friends, and I remember going to it. We'd ride up on our bikes with a blanket, and we'd sit down on the sand, and it was a real neighborhood thing. And we hadn't been to it in many, many years, and I rode up my bike up there 2 years ago, 2011. That's the first time I had been there in maybe 10 years, and I couldn't believe the scene down there. Just a mass of people in one small area, and we ended up locking our bikes about, I don't know, 10 blocks away. You couldn't get any closer with the bicycles, and walking, and there were a lot of intoxicated young people stumbling around.
Yeah. And unfortunately, it lost its hometown, you know, atmosphere. It lost the whole idea of the volleyball event, which was what it's supposed to be, premier volleyball, and it lost that somewhere along the line. And many, many of our neighbors and people visiting were complaining that it was such a crazy event, you know, with people urinating on people's property and people destroying, you know, our residents' property, and it just got so out of control. So we had to do something to try to manage the event itself. I mean, the event is a wonderful event. I mean, the volleyball is just absolutely amazing. But we needed to manage all the intoxication, all these people coming into our community that were really not here to see the volleyball.
Right, right. And what kind of numbers did you have last year?
I want to say about 10,000 total that we had, which was significantly decreased from the 60,000 at the peak in 2011.
And were the local merchants and business owners, you know, were they much happier with that situation, without all the craziness?
They really were. Not only were the residents happy, but the community was happy. And quite frankly, a lot of the people who attended it, who had been attending for years, were happy. I mean, there were certainly people who were not happy. And if you look on the blogs, it said, you know, Manhattan Beach ruined our party. It was the biggest party in the world. It was the best drunk fest in the world. And so right there, it shows you that, you know, we probably did the right thing, because the people who were not happy with our change were the people that just wanted to come in and had no buy-in to this community and just wanted to damage and, you know, property and just have a great old time.
Yeah, yeah. I heard one complaint over the 4th of July weekend. Friends of ours who have three grown children that have played in it for years and years, but they couldn't play in it this year because they had work. It was, you know, it was work day.
Yeah.
So that was the only complaint I heard. But so it's worked out well. So you're going to continue doing that?
For now, we are, and we do recognize, you know, that there are some of those really wonderful people who won't be able to participate because it is during the week, and a lot of people do work during the week,
right.
But it was something that we felt was in the best interest of the community.
Well, because we don't want to happen here what happened down in Huntington yesterday.
That's true.
can you tell us a little bit about that? Do you know what went down there?
So other than this being a huge surf festival, there were some people who got rowdy and decided that they had their own agenda, and I'm sure that alcohol played a factor, intoxication played a factor, and these people just kind of ran amok, and they started looting and rioting down the middle of the downtown area of Huntington Beach.
Okay, I'm going to be naive here. How do all these underage people get to drink? I mean, you can't sell to them. You're not allowed to drink in public. You can't drink on the beaches. So
correct.
How are they getting intoxicated?
So a lot of the juvenile people will come already drunk, or they bring it with them. And there's obviously ways, you know, that they can bring it in purses or in backpacks in some ways. And they do. I mean, there's also, you know, shoulder taps, which is where they tap the shoulder. Someone say, hey, can you buy this alcohol for me? Here's my money. And there are adults who willingly oblige them and go into different establishments and do buy the alcohol for them.
Oh, boy.
So it does happen. It's, you know, alcohol is like it was many years ago when I was growing up, the number one abused substance by juveniles.
Wow. I never did that as a child.
George.
So you came to Manhattan Beach, and that was literally trial under fire.
I mean, it really was.
We threw you into it at that moment. And to think that we are a small community of just, you know, 34,000 or so, and to triple it over a weekend. And, we as a CERT organization for a couple of years, actually, were on a phone backup to run triage and treatment if something had gone wrong. So those of us on the weekend, especially on Saturday, that we're around, we're available by phone to come in and assist if something had happened.
That's one of the things that we really do well in the city of Manhattan Beach and the Manhattan Beach Police Department is that we plan really well for big events like this. You know, the beach is obviously a draw. Manhattan Beach is a destination city, and the Manhattan Beach is well-versed in planning for these events. So we do have people on standby, not just people in, you know, that are working the event in law enforcement, but we do have people on standby, and we have a wonderful volunteer community within the Manhattan Beach area.
Yes, and we saw them all at the picnic this past Saturday.
Yes.
A good number of them were there at our annual meeting and picnic. But talking about volunteers, Chief, why don't we get into the Neighborhood Watch?
Okay. Go ahead. We've had Neighborhood Watch in the city of Manhattan Beach for about the last 30 years, and as far back as, you know, 1980, the concept of this program was introduced, and our residents were really passionate about reducing crime and improving the quality of beach life, and so that dedication has remained to this day. And so it's obvious that police officers can't be everywhere at all times. So we need to involve our citizens because that's essential in preventing crime. So in the city that you just said of about 35,000 people, we currently have, I would say, about 480 Neighborhood Watch block captains. And each block captain represents an entire block. And some of those blocks may be, you know, three or four residents. Some of them may be 15 or 20. So there's about 70% of the city of Manhattan Beach that is covered under Neighborhood Watch. And so we are the ears and eyes, and we look out for each other. And the program is so successful that it's kind of a model for the whole United States. We get calls from people all over the United States saying, you know, what can I do? How can we make our police department so successful in the partnership with our community? And a couple of things. You know, not only is the police department so diligent in working in a partnership with the community, but this community of Manhattan Beach is so engaged. The residents, the businesses, everybody, they're so engaged in helping to ensure that public safety is maintained.
Wow, yeah. I was just about to ask you, so you've been in office a little over 2 years now here in Manhattan Beach?
Yes.
How's it going?
Oh, it's wonderful. You know, I pin myself all the time because I can't believe I've fallen into this little piece of heaven. It's just, you know, it's a wonderful community. The community is engaged. It's a beautiful community, obviously. The community is engaged. The police department's engaged. It's just a big old love fest. Everybody wants the best for the city. So,
lucky you.
Yeah, you know what? All over the L.A. County, all the chiefs of police constantly joke how wonderful it must be to be the chief of police in the city of Manhattan Beach. And I'm like, you got that right. No bones about it.
Well, speaking of, we were just talking about the police department, you have an event coming up next month, Tip a Cop?
Yes.
Where is that going to be held?
So our Tip a Cop, it looks like right now, and obviously more details are to follow, but it looks like it's going to be in September. Last year we held it at the Tin Roof Bistro right here near the Manhattan Village Mall, and it was a really successful event. What Tip a Cop event is, for those of your listeners that may not know, it is a partnership between a local law enforcement agency, such as the Manhattan Beach Police Department, and Special Olympics. And what happens is you go in, the police department goes into this partnership to a restaurant, a local restaurant, and we act as servers. The police department act as servers, hence Tip a Cop. And you normally will get served by a waiter or waitress or serving staff, and you simply tip them as you normally would, but there's an extra envelope on your table to give a donation to the Special Olympics. All of that donations that we collect as police officers for the Special Olympics will go directly to athletes and the sports programs for Special Olympics.
That's great. Yeah, I've seen that before. Some of the other local police departments do it. And I know Torrance has done it, and I think Hermosa Beach has done it. George.
Go ahead. Torrance has done it for many years, and they're very, very successful in it. Last year was our flagship year in doing it, and I must say, because of course I have to brag here about this police department, is that we were able to, in just about 5 hours, get almost $30,000 in donations. It turned out that it was the largest one-night Tip a Cop event in Tip a Cop history. So I have to brag about that.
Wow. $30,000?
Yes. We have such a generous community here.
those are some tips you guys are getting.
Right? It was normally it's, you know, $3,000-$4,000, but we actually received a check from one individual for, I believe it was $20,000.
My goodness.
We are a generous community. Yeah, 21 years ago I could have been living in Hermosa at a house I looked at until we found that little teardown that we moved into 21 years ago in Manhattan Beach. And we are so glad and happy that we did.
The South Bay is an amazing place. Manhattan Beach is just one of those wonderful places within the South Bay.
Well, I'm going to go back a little bit here, Eve. Now tell us a little bit about where you come from originally.
So originally I'm from New York. Born and raised, in case you couldn't pick up on the accent. It comes out when I talk really fast. Yeah.
Where?
I was born in Brooklyn and raised on Long Island.
Where on Long Island?
I was raised in a little community called Levittown.
I went to college at Farmingdale.
Did you really? Just the next town over?
Yeah.
Levittown was the first planned community in the entire world.
I remember
it was planned by a man named William Levitt, and it was in the 1940s, late 1940s, and he was trying to help veterans coming back from the wars to get, affordable housing. So everybody from the city in New York moved out to Levittown for the life of suburbia, and it was really a wonderful place. And from there, it has been mimicked all over the world.
Yeah, that's right. I remember that. I remember one of the kids in my elementary school, Billy Icavetta, who lived a block from me. I grew up on 33rd Street. He was on 32nd Street. When we graduated from elementary school, his family moved out to Levittown. I remember that.
Great place to grow up. You lived on 33rd Street?
33rd and 3rd. Yeah. So, and how did you end up coming to California?
So I, from the time I was really, really young, I always knew I wanted to be a police officer. You know, I didn't want to be Superwoman or anything. I just knew that I wanted to help people. And one of the ways that I could help people when they couldn't help themselves was to become a police officer. I knew I didn't want to become a police officer in New York. I just didn't want to do it there. And I had an aunt who lived in California who, ironically, was the first female police officer in the city of Hawthorne in the 70s. And she was really my role model. And so I decided to come on out here and make it on my own, and I did.
Wow.
Yeah. I was very, very set on what I wanted to do. I knew I had my goals.
Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Strange, huh? As a young child, I knew I wanted to be a police officer.
Hey, George, do you have anything you wanted to add here?
Yeah, Long Island or Southern California?
You know, you can't beat Southern California's weather.
No, no. But then there were the – okay, never mind. No, I can't talk about the – yeah, that was college and
the wild days?
Yeah.
The lost years?
Those weekends. And, the late 60s and – yeah, never mind.
Oh, okay. I'm track here.
I will just expand maybe a little more on our – neighborhood watch.
Yes.
And I was a block captain for, I guess, probably 8 or 9 years.
Wow.
And have just a year ago passed it off to our neighbor Marilyn, because the CERT and my responsibilities and my passion here has taken up a little more time, and I figured I should share the fun. But it...
it's very generous of you, George.
yeah. So we're talking about trying to get together. It's tough on our block. We whenever we have the Map Your Neighborhood, our annual event, it always seems to happen sometime when half the block is away. But coming up in not that distant future is the Neighborhood Night Out, national.
Yes.
Night Out, which is sponsored by
Tuesday,
right? Yep, sponsored by Target. And Eve, if you don't mind, let's talk a little bit more about that. This is a national big evening for Neighborhood Watch and preparedness.
Absolutely. So it's August 6th. It's next Tuesday, and it's called National Night Out, and it's about 30-plus years old. And what it is neighbors and communities getting together that night, having parties or just coming outside, meeting your neighbors, and kind of showing the criminals, hey, we're taking a stand against crime. We're getting together. We're not only with our police department, but we're getting together as a community to say no on don't come into our community. We're standing strong. It's a night where you can also put your porch lights on to show your support, and it's a great way to get to meet the people within your community. If you call our community affairs at 310-802-5186, you can register your neighborhood, that block, and a police officer will come and visit your neighborhood night out party. In fact, last year I went to, I think it was 4 or 5 different parties within Manhattan Beach, and they were wonderful. And it's just a way for neighbors to stand up to say, hey, don't come to our community because we are the eyes and ears and we'll take care of each other.
And I thought it was national at first, but when I looked into it, it's actually international. I guess the Canadians do it too.
It is. About 3 million people participate in National Night Out internationally. There's also military installations all over the country, as well as other countries in Europe that participate in National Night Out.
Well, any excuse for a block party, right?
Exactly. The food is amazing.
And the one time that you don't mind a police officer coming to your house.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, we've been talking about how great, you know, what a great community Manhattan Beach is. So what issues, as far as crime goes, what types of issues does Manhattan Beach specifically have to deal with? What's the big ticket issues in Manhattan Beach?
So the biggest problem that we have to deal with, other than traffic, whether it's parking or moving traffic, which is a pretty big problem because we are a small condensed community, and obviously the beach is a draw, so we do have a lot of traffic issues. But the biggest problem that we have is property crimes. And property crimes are like when somebody takes something from your home, steals your bicycle, takes something from your car. And that was something that I noticed right when I came to the city of Manhattan Beach, in that property crimes were prevalent because there were a lot of people within the community who did not lock their property up and who left things out in plain sight. Now, Manhattan Beach has historically and is a very, very safe community, very, very safe, so safe that it's probably the safest within the South Bay. But people within our community become complacent to that. And so they kind of don't think, well, I don't really have to lock my car, or it's okay if I leave my purse in my car, because this is Manhattan Beach. Unfortunately, when I first got here, I realized that more than 90% of the crimes that occurred, like in vehicle crimes, were 90% were preventable, which means that either people left their stuff in their car visible in plain sight so that the criminals can see it, or they did not lock their property. So you have all these people coming to the community that want to visit this community, and then they look in cars that are parked on the street, and purses are in the cars, iPads, iPods, and sometimes the cars are not locked. So it makes it kind of easy for a criminal to get in, and it's a crime of opportunity.
Which I got to tell you, coming from New York, you know.
Yes.
In New York, people leave their glove boxes wide open so that thieves can see there's nothing in them. People, for a lot of years, used to take the lock out of their trunk so that people wouldn't, you know, jimmy trunks open to see what was in them. I mean, you would never leave anything in your car in New York. So I had to say, when I moved out here, I was like, are these people insane? So
yeah.
I would pull into a 7-Eleven and people would leave their car running with the door open and the window down while they ran into the store to get something.
Yeah, it's true. In New York, my dad worked in Manhattan, and he would take out his radio. He would open up his glove compartment just to show everybody, there's nothing in here, pass along, go to the next car.
Right, exactly.
But here, yes, it's very, very different. I mean, I cannot tell you how many times that we have people, because we are a safe community, that leave purses with ID and money. They leave wedding bands, I mean, in their cars, and they're unlocked. And that's unfortunate because it makes it easy for the criminals, you know, to take advantage of us. So what we decided was we were going to come up with a campaign called Lock It or Lose It. So we illustrated how 90% of the crime were preventable, and then we sent in, kind of in the water bills, a Lock It or Lose It campaign that explained how you need to lock a vehicle at all times, keep your valuables out of sight, leave no trace or sign of electronics such as docking stations and connector cables, remove third row seats and store them in a locked garage, because we were having a problem with third row seats and SUVs being stolen.
What's up with that?
Because they're interchangeable and they're very, very expensive to replace, so they get sold on black market.
Oh, okay, so people just aren't stealing them out of SUVs and sitting on them in their garage.
Oh, no. Oh, no. No, no, no.
Thousands.
They're high profit.
Oh,
yeah, they're worth thousands of dollars. Yes, they are. Don't leave packages or shopping bags visible in your car. Unload your car immediately after you get home. Don't leave cars in the car. Don't leave items in the car overnight, including even in your driveway. And then set your alarm or your anti-theft device. And the whole goal of this is to say, if you don't get it all, the criminals will. And so we want to take care. We don't want to make people frightened or scared people, but if you can help yourself not to become a victim, that's the way to do it. So lock it or lose it. In fact, I have to tell you a funny story. So when I go to Neighborhood Watch block meetings, I'm kind of giving a little bit of a secret here away, but when I go to Neighborhood Watch block meetings, I will purposefully go into the meeting about 5 or 6 minutes late, because what I do is I wait for everybody to go into the home, and then I walk up and down the street after I've just watched people get out of their cars, and I check all of the locks to make sure that people have locked their cars, and I look in the vehicles to see if they've left anything in plain sight. And I cannot tell you how many times I see that. And I think the last time I did it, you know, several months ago, but there were purses left in cars, there were things visible, iPods, iPads, electronic devices, change in that little, you know, everybody has that little change drawer thing right in the middle of the console that they, you know, use for parking meters in the city of Manhattan Beach. That right there adds up to $5 or $6. And if a burglar, you know, or a thief gets, you know, 6 or 7 different cars with all that change, that's good enough for their next hit.
Yeah.
So
I'll tell you, not that long ago, I was out with a girlfriend. I can't remember what we were doing. She was driving. We were in her car. And she said, oh, I want to stop in the store. I want to show you this dress. Come in with me. And I got out of the car, and I went in with her. And I didn't realize until we came back, and I got to the passenger side door, and I looked in the window, and I said, you left your purse on the seat. I smacked her upside the head.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Yeah, it's true. You know, we're getting better. We really are. We're certainly making it tougher on criminals, and people are starting to get the message of lock it or lose it. But I cannot tout that enough. I mean, I just cannot voice that enough, that let's help ourselves not become victims.
Good advice. Good advice. Okay, ladies
and
gentlemen.
As a resident of our wonderful city, we residents do become quite complacent because we do have a fabulous fire department and police department, and a number of residents, and I've found this over the years, are just feel that police and fire are going to take care of us. And after the break here in a minute, we'll talk about disaster preparedness. But
it's time for us to all take responsibility for ourselves.
Yeah, yeah, you've got to do it. You can't never assume that. In our case, the 9 firemen on duty in Manhattan Beach are going to be able to put out all the fires and take care of all the cuts and bruises.
Who took care of the city when all 9 firemen were at the picnic on Sunday? Who's watching the city?
You know what? If you recall, Station 1 ended up leaving at one point. We were lucky. That was a Saturday lunchtime where we did not have any calls.
Yes,
but understand that as those guys are there and they're cooking for our membership, they are all on call and they have the radio. And
I could see them pulling up to a fire with that grill attached to their wing.
No, that was the pickup. That would not have gone to the fire. But yeah, two engines, and a rescue, and that's what we've got. The rescue unit was still at Station 1. We had the reserves at Pollywog with the ambulance, but the rescue was still out there. So it was the rescue was running, whether the firemen were or not. But
All right. Anyway, I'm Jackie Balestra, and you are listening to the South Bay Show, Preparing for Disaster in America, with special guest Manhattan Beach Police Chief Eve Irvine. If you'd like to ask the chief a question or comment on the discussion, the call-in number is 714-242-5288. And, George, we are about to thank a sponsor, aren't we?
Yes, we are. It is never too early to begin planning for your financial future. When it comes to protecting your assets and hard-earned dollars, you want experienced professionals with a proven track record and flawless reputation on your team. Briganti, Cameron, Waters, and Strong Certified Public Accountants and Consultants is the largest full-service accounting firm in the South Bay. They are dedicated to providing professional services of the highest quality. The partners are South Bay residents deeply committed to serving the communities where they live, work, and play. They support a variety of local nonprofit organizations such as Skate Park PV, Palos Verdes Peninsula Land Conservancy, Torrance South Bay YMCA, the Palos Verdes Rotary, and Pediatric Therapy Network, among others. BCWS prides itself on providing national accounting technical experience with the personal attention of a local company. This commitment is to uphold high standards of excellence has proven key to their success and first-rate reputation. Their ultimate goal and reward is to see their clients achieve financial success as they define it, whether that means helping them to reduce their tax burden, assisting them with financial planning to ensure their financial security, succession planning, exit strategies, and wealth transfer. The partners and professionals of BCWS are committed to providing their clients with the expertise and guidance they need to reach their financial goals. Briganti, Cameron, Waters, and Strong is dedicated to helping you navigate your financial success. Call 310 542-0011 for a free consultation. For more information, you may visit their website at www.bcws.com. Mention the South Bay Show by Jackie and receive a 10% discount on your first year's tax return. The offices of Briganti, Cameron, Waters, and Strong are located at 3424 Carson Street, Suite 600 in Torrance.
Briganti, Cameron, Waters, and Strong. Everybody get your tax affairs in order, right?
Yep.
Yep, got to do that. All right. Okay, as I said, our special guest today is Manhattan Beach Police Chief Eve Irvine. So anyway, now we're going to get to the topic of our Tuesday show, disaster preparedness. Eve, can you tell us a little bit about how well or the city of Manhattan Beach is for whatever may come?
Sure. So not only do we prepare locally, we also have mutual agreements with assisting agencies, local, state, and federal to help us in any type of disaster. But the truth of the matter is, well, let me back up. There are several types of disasters. There are large-scale disasters and smaller-scale disasters. The large-scale of disasters are, some of them are natural, like earthquakes, tsunamis, storms, fires. And then other types of disasters are gas leaks, terrorism incidents, homes collapsing, and even personal, like burglaries. I mean, that's a disaster to somebody. It's very significant to them. But there's certain ways that you can deal with the large and the smaller scale, and that is to be prepared. I cannot tout preparedness enough, and I'm sure that George will, you know, chime in with being prepared. One of the things that we do in the city of Manhattan Beach is we've developed a program called Map Your Neighborhood. And Map Your Neighborhood works in concert with the police department, with our local agencies. And it's basically a program designed to help communities, smaller communities, in neighborhoods, in individual neighborhoods, respond to a disaster. And so basically the premise is that if there's a natural disaster or a terrorism disaster and on a huge scale, the public safety will not be able to get in there for a couple, maybe even 2 or 3 days. And so it behooves a neighborhood to get to know who's in your neighborhood that can help you out when these disasters do occur. So let's say you have a certain community within the city of Manhattan Beach, and you decide that you want to participate and map your neighborhood. So we will help you train on how to look for where your gas meters are, how to shut your water off, identify the neighbors in your neighborhood, your specific neighborhood, that require extra help, including like elderly people, people with special needs, children who may be home alone during the day when this disaster occurs. And then we get you all together so that you understand who has these special training and who can help each other out, so that after a disaster, the people within your specific neighborhood will kind of look out for each other until law enforcement can kind of get in there and then help folks out. So that's the premise of Map Your Neighborhood. In fact, we do have a Map Your Neighborhood training that's coming up, and it's by reservations only, and that will be Wednesday, September 11th, kind of ironic, September 11th, at 2013 from 7 p.m. to 8:30, and it's going to be in the police and fire community room, and that will help you learn the 9 steps to take immediately following a disaster, how to identify the skills and equipment each neighbor has that would be useful in an effective disaster response.
We did that on my block several years ago. We have a block captain, and they brought in the local CERT team and a police officer, and they passed out sheets for all of us to mark, you know, put our address on and mark where our gas and our water lines were. And then they went a step further, and they asked for people to volunteer for various, like, jobs in the event of a major disaster. Like, is there somebody that would be willing to watch all the young children?
Right.
Or is there anybody that would be willing to go and knock on each door, you know, to check to see if anybody needs assistance? And, yeah, it's definitely good to know.
The nice thing about the Map Your Neighborhood, it's a segue between –
Neighborhood Watch.
Neighborhood Watch.
Yeah.
And CERT training. And you're right. When you have you have the sheet of paper, whether, you know, and you can post it on your window. Everything's okay or you need help. The big thing, a neighborhood watch, if you know who your neighbors are and you know their needs, what they have, if you have the elderly, you know when people are home during the day and or in the evening, if something happens, often you will know if somebody should be in that home. And if there is no response, then you would want to take some additional actions. And when something happens, we all come out to the sidewalk with our 5-pound fire extinguishers. Make sure, you know, if you're listening, 5-pound, don't get much smaller than that. These little fire extinguishers are not going to do you much good. A good 5-pound fire extinguisher will put out a good size trash can, stove, a small fire. And if everybody comes out to the curb after an earthquake here in Southern California, or whatever it may be, that's going to double or triple or quadruple your chances of having the equipment to put out what might happen there.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, George, that's a good point. Every time we do have a small earthquake, nothing, you know, I was going to say ground shaking, but every time we have a small earthquake, the first thing I do is I walk out down my driveway to the curb. I look up and down the street. You know, several of the neighbors are out. We all just kind of look at each other like, okay, everything's okay. It's funny, like 8 times out of 10, there'll be water running down the street. You know what I mean? When it's a little bit of a, not a huge earthquake, but a little bit more like somebody's sprinkler cracks or something, and you'll see lots of water coming down the street, and, you know, call the water department, and they come and take care of it. That's kind of a regular around here. Have you ever seen that?
Absolutely, and that's the whole premise with Neighborhood Watch and Map Your Neighborhood, like George was saying. It is a segue. It bases on the premise of Neighborhood Watch helping each other because public safety may not be able to get in there right away. So, I mean, especially if it occurs during the day and there are people at work, children might be home alone, and their parents can't get into the location because of infrastructure damage or animals. Let's say somebody can't get into the neighborhood for 1 or 2 days and they happen to be at work. You just know where animals are so that people can help take care of their neighbor's animals. It's basically setting yourself up to be a little community to support and help each other. Plus, remember, Neighborhood Watch is all about getting to know your neighbors, who belongs in the neighborhood and who doesn't. And this is just one step in ensuring that.
That's a good point. That's a very good point. At my Neighborhood Watch, I discovered that we have a doctor, 2 nurses, and two firemen that live on my block.
I want to live on your street.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
I'm feeling pretty good about that right now.
That's okay. That's a good neighborhood.
We have six CERT members on our block.
On your block. Well, that figures. Anybody that lives on your block has no idea what they're stepping into.
Yeah, I know. And we have some neighbors that are moving and some new ones coming in, so I get to start all over again.
It's a prerequisite for moving onto that street.
That's right. Now, you're going to live here, you're going to have to go through a certain
thing. You to indoctrinate them the minute they move in.
Water, yeah, well, I might scare them away. water running down, landers and swimming pools overflowing and shaking out. That I'll never forget. Shortly after we moved in here 21 years ago was the Landers quake. And it was the big rolling motion, and water comes out of the swimming pool and down the driveway, and the neighbors weren't sure if they had broken water lines or it was just the water out of the swimming pool, which is what it was. But that was interesting. My first earthquake was Landers, a 5.0.
And you survived it.
I did.
And then you stocked up on the booze.
You know, coming from New York, earthquakes are not my most favorite thing to participate in. You know, I'm the one that runs around with the hard hat thinking, you know, okay, we got it, it's all good. And it's like, you know, a 3.0, it's nothing major. But I have not ever gotten accustomed to them. People say, oh, they happen all the time, you'll get accustomed to them. You know, I've been here 30 years and I've never gotten accustomed to earthquakes.
Yeah, no, either have I. I don't think anybody does.
They unnerve me.
I'm not even sure. I don't feel the 3.0s anymore.
Oh, see, there you go, and I feel every one of them.
There was somebody made mention just a few weeks ago. In fact, they had blogged that, or it was on Facebook, something about the earthquake. And I said, what earthquake? I did not.
Every time I'm in the gym and one of those weightlifters drops one of those giant bars, I think it's an earthquake. Anyway, so George, we're going to throw it to you, and you're going to give us your schedule of upcoming events.
Okay, very good. Well, nothing this evening, but tomorrow evening, our own Jackie continues on with her women's self-defense class. Eve, you might be interested. You should go down there and join her one Wednesday evening. Wednesday at 7 p.m., the Triton Room, second floor at Fitness Evolution, 200 North Harbor Drive in Redondo Beach. It is a class designed for women by women. Jackie, have you beat up on any guys here recently in the last couple of weeks?
No, we haven't. You know, the summer months, it's always very odd. You know, a lot of people are out of town, so the class size is fluctuating wildly. You know, last week there were only 5 people in. The week before there was 14 people. So it's fluctuating, and I don't want to schedule any of that until, you know, everybody is kind of back in and training regularly. But I got to tell you, the only person that gets hurt in that class is me. I get punched in the mouth, smacked upside the head, kicked. It's so funny because people have to learn how to pull their punches. So, yeah, I'm the only one that gets beat up in that class.
Oh, you're supposed to pull your punches?
When you're training, yes.
Oh, okay. All right. Also, tomorrow evening at the Jocelyn Center, 1601 North Valley Drive in Manhattan Beach, the City of Manhattan Beach and Chevron are hosting a town hall meeting. I'm not sure if you all know or not. You know, Chevron is in their 100th year this year, and Chevron supplies over 20% of the motor vehicle fuels consumed in Southern California and 40% of the jet fuel at LAX. And they're going to come in. A number of their personnel are going to talk about the regulatory structure, what they do for emergency preparedness, how they work with the communities. And, of course, they are in El Segundo with their monster refinery, but they are so good to us in the city of Manhattan Beach also. That's tomorrow evening at 6 p.m., the Jocelyn Center, right across and close to City Hall and our police and fire department. Down the road, next Tuesday, Heather Cotter of Cotter Consulting in the Washington, D.C. area is going to be on the program, and we're going to talk about some more police type. We're going to talk about run, hide, and fight, and active shooter preparedness, and the knowledge that one would need to take part and survive an active shooter. Nothing that we really want to be able to talk about, but indeed, we should. We need to.
So George, real quick, so that's a situation, say you're out at the movies with your family and some guy walks into the theater and opens fire. That's what the conversation is going to be about, what to do?
In a business situation.
Okay.
You're at work and something happens and you have three choices. You can run, you can hide, or you can fight. And we'll talk about all three of them and hopefully prepare somebody. We never want it to happen. We never think it's going to happen to us, but we all know that it has. And so we will discuss that next Tuesday on the 6th. On the 11th, on 8/11, it is our Concerts in the Park series, and we as a CERT organization provide first aid. We set up and we talk to people there. The 11th and on 8/25, we will have both the Beatles concert, the tribute, and the Neil Diamond tribute. So that's Concerts in the Park, Manhattan Beach, Poliwag Park. It starts from 5. It's from 5 until 7. On 8/11 and Sunday 8/25. On 8/13, our guest on our show 2 weeks from today is going to be Chris Wright. And Chris is the emergency planning specialist for the Getty Trust Security Operations. And Chris is going to discuss Business and Industry Council, or the Business and Industry Council, on emergency preparedness and planning. It is short. It is BICEP, B-I-C-E-P-P. And what they do and their members to plan for emergencies on the business side. So that is 2 weeks from today at our time. And then last but not least, on 8/17, we will, in our police and fire community room, have a tabletop training for command and control, a little ICS training. Our own Gary Stabile is going to put on this. This last month, Hermosa hosted some command training on the 16th, and we will have six groups of five, and we will give them the opportunity to use their training and knowledge to respond to a disaster scenario. And that's going to be Saturday from about 10 a.m. until around 2 p.m. at our community center, 420 15th Street. It is limited to 30 persons, so you may respond to training at mbcerta.org if you want to come take place in that, take part. On October 5 and 6 is our hometown fair, and on 10-12, October 12th, the Beach Cities Joint Cert organization will have their great shakeout. You want to save that date. And then on, I believe it's 10-17 this year, is the actual Great Shakeout. It is, yes, which is the national and international day of Great Shakeout and earthquake exercises across the country. And that's what's going on this week in the South Bay.
That's a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
The guy that's going to be on, I don't know if it's not next week, the week after, the Getty guy?
Yep.
Will that have anything to do with how, like, the Getty Museum prepares for emergencies? They all grab paintings and run in a bunker?
I don't know. You know, Getty Trust Security Operations. So, you know, we'll have to ask him.
All right, okay.
You'll have that opportunity.
You mentioned also the Manhattan Beach concerts in Pollywog Park. Eve, can you... do you know what kind of numbers those concerts are very popular. What kind of numbers, what kind of crowds do you get at those?
I want to say a couple of thousand people. It's pretty significant. They're wonderful family events. People come out there and they picnic, and it's just a great way to spend a Sunday night.
Yeah, and what'd you say, George, the Beatles and who else?
The Beatles and the Neil Diamond are the two more popular.
Yeah, those are the two big ones, right?
This last Sunday night, I had things to do and I couldn't. I wanted to go to it. It was the Woodstock
right.
Festival. Right.
You would have been there in tie dye, right?
there were people there in tie dye. I gave up a chance to go to the original Woodstock.
Oh my!
I was working in Syracuse, New York, at a Piper Aviation at a fixed base operator at Hancock Field summer, and the helicopter people next door came over and said, look, we've got to go run some supplies. We've been contracted to go to Eastern New York, and they want us to fly some supplies in and out, and I'm not going to pay you, but if somebody wants to come, you can ride along and work it with us. And I took, I was there to make money. I was, in the middle of, college and said, well, I need to stay here and work instead of going and playing. And had I known...
You're regretting it ever since.
Oh, I have. I have. But I'm a better person because I stayed in... Am I really? That I stayed in work that summer? I don't know. I could have been a better person from,
What
flying and doing my first volunteer work at that time by going and dropping supplies into those needy people that were running around in the mud.
What is it they say? If you remember the 60s, you weren't there or something like that?
Oh, yeah.
Well.
I can't remember.
It's something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I remember the I remember some of the 60s. I remember more of the 70s.
Okay, so anyway, Chief Irvine, give us contact info for the Manhattan Beach Police Department, you know, for the different different services and stuff. You don't want everybody calling 911 for other stuff, right?
Correct. 911 is simply for an emergency.
Right, right.
So if you want to call the communications where you want to report a crime that's not in progress, that goes to a regional communications dispatch center, and that's 310-545-4566. Our community affairs and community crime prevention number is 310-802-5186. For general information is the desk, and that number is 310-802-5140.
And any website information, a website address, or how can people get more information on the web?
www.citymb.info, I-N-F-O.
And if they just want to call and chat with you?
then they can call the desk. They can somehow find their way to me.
How to get to Bernadette.
Yes, how to get to Bernadette.
Yeah. Yeah, ask for Bernadette. And then she's, oh, no, forget it. No, wait.
Yeah.
Bernadette the gatekeeper?
Well, we don't like to refer to as that. You can always get to talk to your chief of police, but she does take the calls, yes.
Okay, all right. We all got to get to know Bernadette, right?
She's a wonderful woman.
Yeah.
Bernadette went through CERT training.
Yes, she did. Very active.
George, everybody in Manhattan Beach has gone through CERT training at this point.
No,
we're all afraid of George.
They have not, and it's not because I don't try.
No, if it's up to you, they all will.
Well, I am, you know, it's like, okay, I have two more council members to get through, the two newest, and I will schedule this next class this fall around their schedule.
Is that Tony and Tony Derrico and who?
Mark Burton.
Yep. They will both go through the class this fall. No excuses.
They have no idea what they got into. They just thought they were going to run for city council and skate. They had no idea they'd have to deal with you, George.
I know, but they do. They knew that. You know, I told them that before. I said, you know, we are an organization that is 300 plus strong. You know, what can I tell you?
And you're going to gang up on them.
Well, only if I have to.
Yeah.
If I have to.
Well, anyway, a belated welcome to Chief Irvine from us here at the South Bay Show. We tried to get you on early. Last year, was it?
Yes.
Last year we tried to get you on. Yeah. George, how did that work out? Did I ask you to get...
I don't remember. I remember the 70s. I don't remember last year.
I think I had asked somebody. I said, "Hey, get me the new chief of police to be on the show." We were all excited about it when we heard about it, and I ended up getting the police department spokesperson or something. Very nice woman, just not the chief.
Oh, well, thank you, guys.
I aim high. All right. Anyway, Eve Irvine, police chief, Manhattan Beach Police Department, has been our guest today. I hope you all have enjoyed listening to the show. My name is Jackie Balestra. Chief Irvine, thank you so much for being our guest this morning.
Thank you so much for having me. I truly appreciate it.
Good. I'm glad we'll definitely have to have you on again. And George, thank you.
Yes.
Thank you.
Always.
Thank you for having my back today.
You are quite welcome. You did a fabulous job.
Well, thank you, but that doesn't let Joe off the hook.
I know.
When he gets back to town.
We will punish him.
Oh, yeah. He's going to go down the gauntlet with us. All right. Okay. Anyway, again, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.